I'm so excited to talk to you guys about today's sponsor, Prose. Prose is the custom beauty brand that is all over your feed. I had been wanting to try them for so long. And when I tell you guys that I put on my Instagram story that they were going to be sponsoring the podcast, I got so many genuine organic responses from my following of people being like, oh my God, I love Prose. I've been using it for years. So don't even just take it from me, but take it from the genuine people that reached out agreeing with me about how much they love Prose. And when Prose says custom, they actually mean it. Each and every bottle of Prose custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Their in-depth consultation analyzes over 80 factors for a complete view of your life and beauty goals. One of the coolest parts of the questionnaire that I thought was they literally asked me about my location and my zip code so that they could understand how hard the water is here, what the UV index is like, if it's cold, if it's dry, and all of that goes into these truly personalized products. Prose even did a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised controlled clinical study, aka the gold standard in research studies, and Prose proved that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives. So try it for yourself and get your healthiest hair in 30 days or your money back. Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering the Arty Friends listeners an exclusive trial offer so that you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/artyfriends. That's prose.com/artyfriends for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. prose.com/artyfriends.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Arty Friends podcast. This is Allison.
And this is Kara.
Today we have the last episode of our 8 Dimensions of Wellness series. We will be ending this series with financial wellness, a topic that people have so much to say about, money. And Amber Frankhuizen was the perfect guest to speak on this. I was so impressed with our interview. She is a very inspiring entrepreneur and also a podcast host. We'll give her full bio in a little bit. First, I have Kara with me. The gang is back.
Yes, the gang is back. Sadly, I was not on this interview. I was on a work trip, which I'll catch you guys up on next week. But I was so bummed to miss this, especially after Allison was just raving about how smart and incredible Amber was. So hopefully I'll get to catch her another time. But very excited to listen and learn all about her expertise because she's truly killing it at educating and inspiring women to be better with their finances.
Yeah, and this interview was really long. And as I kind of said last week when we did the mental health episode, we're just going to jump right into peaks of the week and then go into the topic and we'll have our fun girl chat next week.
Okay, yes, let's do peaks. What was your peak of the past week?
It was a pretty chill week for me, just a lot of work. It was really rainy. So my peak isn't that exciting, but it's been very overdue. I finally got a second iPhone because I have like 15 social media accounts, probably more. I don't know, between clients, 1404, us, my personal, New Wave, Omaha Local. Like I am constantly toggling back and forth between logging into accounts and emails. And my poor little iPhone 11, she's been struggling. And I've been getting so much shit from my friends the past couple months over my iPhone 11. Everyone is like, girl, you kind of do like content for a living. Why do you have an iPhone 11 with like no storage? And I'm like, you know, you guys are right. It's time. And so I went to T-Mobile because literally I can't even get my phone to load things. Like it's been a problem because I upgraded the storage to have 2 terabytes in the cloud. But you know how then when you go back into your camera roll and it just takes forever to load, I like need the content on my actual phone. And so I went to T-Mobile yesterday and Thankfully, I've been a customer of theirs for a while, and they were running a promotion that the iPhone 13 was half off. So it was like $350, which I thought was very reasonable, all things considered. And it only made my monthly bill go up by like $50. And here's the best part. Now, the fourth line will be free. I already got a, they gave me a full number and a SIM card for a fourth phone, because it's me, my personal phone, Clay's phone, and now this work phone. And so I'm like, man, all I have to do is put the SIM card into a fourth phone, and then I could have a different, like maybe the podcast is one phone, client work is the fourth phone, because if it's not costing me anything for the fourth one. So all around, I'm excited to get that really organized, because I spend so much time trying to get my camera roll organized and toggling back and forth. And then my brain is like trying to work on personal stuff, and then messages are coming in from a different account. Like, it's very overwhelming. And so I was trying to be like, okay, if my phone was a physical manifestation, I would never have all of this going on in one room or at one desk. It would be insane. So,
no, exactly. I love that for you. I would love to get another phone for work stuff. So maybe that's going to inspire me. We'll see. Because I'm with you. Because I shoot a lot of content creation now on these work trips as like a social shooter. And if you run out of storage when you're halfway through a shoot, like that can't happen, which it does happen. It happened once when we were in Saudi. I was freaking out. Luckily, I could use someone else's phone and then I'd airdrop it later. But it's like that cannot be happening in front of clients. That's so unprofessional.
Literally on Sunday, I spent like 6 hours just deleting stuff off my phone. Because you do a shoot, like you said, for a client, and then you don't need that on your phone anymore. But you're like, well, what if they need a reshoot, or what if they want it? So then you're like airdropping it onto your computer to put on a hard drive. And it's just, it gets messy very easily.
Yeah.
Well, you can be my fourth line.
I'm excited for you. I was going to say, you should find a friend that can be the fourth line and honestly just have them pay you. It's cheaper.
All right.
Find someone who like is not getting a good deal. So DM Allison if you need a phone.
Yeah. What was your peak of the week?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll give all the fun updates on Visit California. That's who the trip was for. I was literally there for like 2 weeks. It was so much fun. So cool. Peak was I literally had like a top 10, maybe not top 10, but like top 20 when I was on this trip. It was literally one of the best days ever. Everything was so lovely. It went right. We were in Monterey, California. Started the day at this like amazing bakery. I think it's called, I'll link it in the show notes. It's like Aria Bakery, and had like the best baked goods and breakfast, avocado toast, my entire life. So gorgeous. And then we went on a drive, like the 17-mile drive all throughout Pebble Beach. And we rented this vintage, a 1969 red Firebird. It was so cool. All the grandparents and like car enthusiasts were just like screaming and cheering when we drove by, because it was just like such a cool vintage car. And I never realized, and I guess my parents have a cool car. We have a vintage car that's been in our family literally since the 70s. But driving a cool car literally is spreading happiness. Like, it makes other people happy, because old cars have so many memories for people. Like, these grandparents are just come up to our car when we were parked and they're like, oh my gosh, what year is this? I had this car when I was 16. We would break out of my parents' house and drive around. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you're literally spreading joy. So if you want to rent a vintage car, I highly recommend it. And like, there's just so many parts to stay that were like a movie scene. Like, we were driving the car down this gorgeous ocean drive with all these trees and sights of the ocean. And like, there was these bikers, and one of the bikers saw our car, and he like literally started screaming and put his hands out. I was like, ah, and like waving at us. And it was literally like a rom-com or like a movie of like someone, I don't know. It was just so cool. So and then after that, we went horseback riding. I mean, just so many cool things. So my peak was having just like a peak day of my whole life.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds insanely magical.
Yes, it was just so magical. And I'll talk about this next week. We just had so many nice people on our trip. And the trip started out so bad, and it got good. And like, all these people we were running into were just part of the good part. And just, yeah, more and more details to come. But it was a magical day for sure.
Oh, I'm so glad you got to have that. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Peaks of the week for you guys?
Yes. I have to read this one from Danielle, because I am wildly impressed. She said, finishing no spend March, and I'm a third of the way through yoga teacher training. No spend months are fascinating to me. I have just been thinking a lot about if I don't spend money some days, it's like I miss the dopamine. Like, I want to go to days where I spend no money, but then it'll be like 7 o'clock and I'm like, I just need to buy dinner out or something, because I like need the dopamine hit of like buying a tiny little thing. Even if it's like, I got a black coffee at the coffee shop today, something. What is wrong with me? If anyone relates, let me know. Please don't make me feel alone in that.
Okay, this one is also from another Allison. She said, my daughter's wedding. For 2 years, I've been thrifting mismatched glassware and it finally came to fruition. That's amazing. I hope it was the most beautiful wedding ever. It sounds so stunning. What thought and care that you put into this day. That's so sweet.
Yeah, I love that so much. Hopefully you can maybe sell the whole set together or like put it in a china cabinet or do something cool with it now that the event's over.
So cool.
Love this. Liv said, going to Amsterdam with my brother. Love a sibling trip. That is amazing. And of course, love Amsterdam. I hope you have the best time.
Oh, so sweet. Okay, and last one from Lindley. She said, went to a local market with friends. We had a lot of cute finds and took a lot of cute photos. Love that so much. That sounds like a great time.
As always, send in your peaks of the week on our Instagram story box every Monday. The username is at Already Friends Podcast.
Let's get into Amber's interview. Do you want to introduce Amber and give her bio?
Yes. Amber Finkhusen is the founder, CEO, and chief strategist at AFMKTG, which is Amber Finkhusen Marketing, and she's also the host of the Old Money Podcast. Her agency fills an unmet need in the market, merging the realms of art and real estate development. With a passion for placemaking and storytelling, Amber has not only led AFMKTG to win awards, but has also cultivated a reputation for creating edgy and elevated brands. Through her podcast, The Old Money Podcast, Amber is on a mission to heal the financial fight or flight response by providing investing techniques for beginners and taking the fear out of managing one's finances. Amber believes in the power of consciously spending to enhance the quality of life and advocates for living the life of your dreams, but without breaking the bank. She also specializes in creating additional revenue streams and shares invaluable insights into navigating the world of luxury business. We talk about all of these things today and more. So without further ado, here is Amber Finkhusen. Hi, Amber. Welcome to the Already Friends Podcast.
Hello. I feel like we're already friends. I've loved chatting with you so far, and I can't wait to get into this today.
Same. We've been spitting some jokes over here off mic, but we were like, we have to stop. We got to hit record and save all of this good chatter for the episode. Amber is going to be our financial wellness guest. You are so decorated for your age already. I'm like, how is this her resume? How, like, please, aww. I want you to give us all of the behind the scenes of your story because I'm just in awe.
Well, that's very sweet. I will say that all of the accolades come with a lot of burnout, a lot of tears, you know, how it goes. And things are not always as they seem. But, you know, I can't complain. I feel very grateful to be where I am right now. And today I am the founder of a creative agency. So it's kind of crazy when people are calling, you know, like people write articles or I'll go on podcasts and they're like, Amber is a luxury branding expert. And I'm like, am I really? Like, that's such a compliment, but I guess I kind of am because that's what we do. We specialize in branding, storytelling, video production, graphic design, all the things for luxury brands. And then of course, the different modalities in which you bring those things to life would be social media, print advertising, website development, all that kind of stuff. So we play in medical aesthetics, yachting, real estate development, and real estate development is where I come from. So before I started my agency, I did the whole corporate girly thing. I climbed that ladder and I promptly jumped off right at the top because it was so much pressure. I was at one point the vice president of sales and marketing for a real estate development firm. And in my career, I've overseen the sales and or marketing of nearly $500 million in assets, which I was like, I was too green. I don't want to say not qualified. I was qualified because I did it, but I was very young and very inexperienced. And so through that journey, working in a high pressure environment at such a young age, like I just burnt out and I was scraping by and trying to figure out how to survive. And so I fell into really intense personal development. Like I've done it all. I've read all the books. I walked on the coals with Tony Robbins. Like I've been to the conferences. I've cried in front of strangers. Like I did it all. And I think what really happened for me through that process is I was able to heal a lot of pieces of myself that I didn't even know needed healing so that I could kind of get away from this desire to achieve, I would say in a external validation type of a way. Now what I do with my work is my art and it's my fun and it's all the things. And in the meantime, I've been able to make some money doing it and healing my money story along the way.
Oh my gosh. I want to take it back to your real estate days. Since we are going to be talking a lot about money today, did seeing numbers of that size at such a young age How did that impact your mindset around certain amounts of money?
It totally changed me because I grew up in the suburbs of Northern California where everybody's mom was a teacher. Everybody's dad worked at Intel. It was like the one place. That was like the thing, okay? There were no entrepreneurs in my neighborhood. I didn't have any of my parents' friends who were doing something that I was like, oh, wow, PR or creative. Like I didn't see that. And then all of a sudden, walking into $150 million buildings, you're talking to family offices, which are families that have hundreds of millions of dollars of net worth, and they actually need to deploy it. So they're like, yeah, we'll build this building with you. Or, you know, you're going to talk to capital partners that do this for a living. And they're like, how much money do you need? Like 50 million, 100 million? And it really changes the game. I once sold a house to somebody in La Jolla, walking through with them. And the next day they paid with a cashier's check for $10 million. And they were like, we'll just take the furniture too. And I was like, oh, this is possible for people. Okay, this can be possible for me as well. Because at the end of the day, they're all just people. They all have their own shit. They all have their own problems. And they're all just normal people with families and kids and parents and traffic and all the things that we have as well.
That just like put my jaw on the floor. I feel like I need way more of that in my life. Being in Nebraska, there is wealth here from Warren Buffett, but I haven't really been exposed to environments like that. For someone who is in a situation like me where they're not in those rooms or talking to those people, what advice do you have for them?
I think the biggest thing, because I call these people expanders. These are the expanders of my worldview. Okay. So these are the people who show me that it can be done. And by the way, part of my personal development journey has been healing any sort of jealousy. Like I don't feel jealous about anybody anymore. I don't feel this like, oh, must be nice for them vibe, because I know that those feelings are keeping me away from wealth. So I've done a lot of work to kind of navigate, why do I feel that way? Is it stories that my parents told me? Actually, yeah, that's a lot of it, and all these types of things. But for looking for expanders in your life, I mean, when I was in high school, when I was in college, when I was post-grad, we didn't have social media the way that we do now. I was reading books. Like I read Tony Robbins' book, Unshakable, maybe 10 years ago. That changed my life. And it's a little bit more cumbersome than just getting in a room with somebody, but they're on the internet. They have their podcasts. They have their books. We can get into the mindset of them by dedicating our attention to it. And the other thing is too, is that I think, and I get a lot of questions about this for my podcast, people are like, how can I get into these higher net worth circles? And I think a lot of us forget that while we're on this journey, we're growing, but we need our circle, like our peers, to grow with us. Because, you know, it's like the friend that you had in your finance class in college who's going to write your loan when you're ready to buy a house. You know, it's the person that you sat next to in stats that's going to be the one that you call when your friend's looking for a job in tech or whatever it might be. All of our network now, we need to surround ourselves today with the right network and grow together in that mindset together. I mean, you guys, you can't just go and knock on Warren's door and be like, what's up, Warren B? Like, let's hang. You got to find like your homies now that are going to grow up with you and have the same mindsets as you. So going to the conferences with them now, reading the books with them now, all those types of things I think are really beneficial.
That's a really good answer. And you had touched on not feeling jealous anymore. I would love to hear more about that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I used to feel really insecure in, I mean, going back to elementary school through high school, navigating friendships with girlfriends and never really knowing myself. And I had to get really honest. Actually, something came up last year where it triggered this feeling again. So it's fresh in my mind of, oh my God, I'm so jealous. And it was related to my podcast of like, I had worked so hard on this and I saw somebody else that I assumed was succeeding more than I was, that I had helped. And I was really envious. And I said to myself, you know what? This is my path. That is their path. If I get distracted by what they're doing, I get off of my path. And so being really conscious and being on top of my thoughts and just noticing with a lot of grace for myself, okay, that's coming up again. The more you focus on that, Amber, the less you focus on your own project. The more you focus on that, Amber, the less you focus on your own project. Like turn it off. And so I actually had to completely like get off of social media for a couple of weeks to like reset myself, get back into my groove regarding the podcast and think about what can I do to move myself forward and how can I hold them with grace and celebration and also hold that for myself. And I will tell you the path that the journey that I was on with the podcast, I mean, it hockey sticked after that, as they say in venture capital. Like I just, like it went through the roof and like the growth has been crazy. And I don't even want to say like it's been better or worse than that other person's because I'm not paying attention. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just holding them in celebration for whatever it is they're doing, whatever path they're on. And I'm doing the same thing as well.
This ties into when you and I chatted on the phone last week, and you were saying how emotional and financial wellness are tied so closely together. Mm-hmm. I think we should do a deep dive.
Oh my God. It's so crazy. Like, I'm in this financial space now, and I just want to caveat this too. Like, I'm not a financial expert. Okay. I didn't take a quiz or a class or a certification. I've become my own financial guru. Okay. And the reason that I had to do that for myself is because I wasn't seeing the conversations being had that were relevant to me. People are saying like, budget and put your money in an envelope and like, just don't spend so much. And I'm like, but I'm sad and I want to go to Sephora. Like, why doesn't this relate to me? And I recognized actually through a very painful experience, how our emotions are tied in with money and how our behaviors just are tied in with the chemicals in our brain and the way that our body is just trying to get by and survive, but we have all of these really complicated games layered on top of our lizard brain. So we're just trying to make it in this world. We're trying to get DoorDash once a week. I'm trying not to be sad. I'm trying to look hot at the club, whatever it is. And I'm supposed to just like manage my money super like diligently and never have an emotional moment with it. Not for me. So for me, I coined this term financial fight or flight because we've all heard about flight or flight in our bodies, right? It's like when we perceive danger or we're under stress, our body actually dumps a bunch of chemicals. Like we have these receptors in our brains and the amygdala, and it dumps adrenaline and cortisol, and it does these things to move your body into action. And the type of action that you take when you're stressed or in fear is usually not very thought out. It's usually just to get to safety, and it's fast action for comfort. So when your emotions are taking over your critical thinking piece of your brain, how are you supposed to budget when you're walking through Sephora after having a really hard day at work? It doesn't work that way. So I had to get really honest again with just recognizing, again, same thing with the jealousy. Ooh, staying on top of my brain. Amber, you're feeling sad. What's going on in there right now? And giving my brain, because, you know, I don't know what y'all's spiritual beliefs are, if your brain, your soul, whatever are different, but like my brain is chemicals. My brain is just trying to save me. And what's happening in the stress and the fear and the sadness, my amygdala, it gets hijacked and I can't make good decisions at that time. So I recognize that those stressors of my life, and then also on top of that, the stress that comes along with being in debt, or the stress that comes along of feeling this like existential dread of how hard it is to live today, all of that was affecting how I was treating my money. So I had to figure out how to override this in a really loving way, because I don't want to be mad at myself. I don't want to beat myself up. And that's what I was doing. A ton of shame for being in a lot of debt. I was like, I'm smarter than this. Like, why am I in this position again and again and again? Like, I'm so dumb. I'm bad at money. All these stories that you start telling yourself. And so getting on top of my brain really meant like, okay, it's going to be my responsibility to notice this, be really gentle with myself and be really honest about this is just chemicals. This isn't a reaction that's happening in my brain that I can control, but it's something that's automatic. So I had to slow myself down. That was like my whole goal for like 3 years. I had been, and again, you know, I'm working this job, my vice president. I'm like, wow, making six figures, big bonuses, and I'm five figures in debt. I'm miserable, right? Like things are not happening well for me in that time of my life. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave this corporate job. I knew I had to do it because I was just totally burnt out. I'm going to quit and I'm just going to like save money so that I can really do nothing for 6 months. That was my goal. So I saved, you know, $30,000, $40,000 over the course of a year. So I was super frugal. I paid off all my debt and I was like, oh my God, look at me. I can do this. And I was like, I'm just going to take some time off of work after I leave this job and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, 2 months later, after I left that job, my phone started ringing. And then I was like, oh yeah, I can help you with your marketing. Somebody else asked. I can help you with your marketing too. And then next thing I know, I have a business and then I have more business than I can handle on my own. So I started an agency and I'm like, look at me. I did this big thing. And then right again, five figures in debt. And so it was this pattern, right? And I was like, I should be better than this by now. So I had to put all of these, I don't know, like booby traps in place in my life so that I would stop spending money impulsively. So some of the things that I did, I don't know, Allison, are you like woo-woo? Are you a woo-woo person?
I'm a bit woo-woo. Yes, we've gone quite woo-woo on this show before.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. I was listening to a couple of podcasts. I was like binging this weekend and I was like, God, you guys just have the best energy and the best vibe.
Thank you.
But I don't know like how weird I can get because I got kind of weird with my money.
But I think that's what we always try to promote on this show is like everyone can have their own beliefs. It's just fascinating to hear someone else's perspective on it. So don't hold back. Yeah. Like your story is your story.
I love that. because, you know, in normal conversation, like I probably wouldn't tell somebody I do business with that I did this, but I think it really helped me. So let me tell you what I did. So first of all, I was spending like crazy, just that Google form fill, you know, your credit card information goes in right away, whatever. So I turned that off, turned off Apple Pay. Great. Your girl knew all 16 digits of all of her credit cards by heart. Okay. I had it all memorized. So if I turned off Apple Pay, I was still like 4465. Like I knew my credit card numbers, you know, I was going through it. I had to call my bank and lie. And I said, I lost my wallet and I need all new credit cards so that I wouldn't know the numbers by heart anymore. When I got those credit cards, I actually took them and I put them in a plastic bag, like a Ziploc. I put water in it and I put them in the freezer and I froze my credit cards, not just because I didn't want to touch them, but energetically. Like I was done. I froze the credit cards. They are only there for emergencies.
That is so cool.
I had to do it because I just, your girl was pulling it out all the time and I had to slow it down. And not only did I move to a cash-based system, which is what a lot of these financial gurus tell us about, like Dave Ramsey is a big proponent of this. And listen, in today's day and age, like my coffee shops in my neighborhood don't even accept cash. Well, that's great. Again, you can't get coffee, whatever. It's very cumbersome and it's very annoying. And so I'm having all this cash all the time and that's my budget for the month. It's like the envelope system where you have so much money for groceries, so much money for play, so much money for this, so much money for that. And I would take my money and I would literally iron it. I would literally put it in like between a towel and I would iron it so that it was nice and crisp so that I felt really connected to that money and it looked really beautiful all stacked up so that it would feel more painful if I wanted to part with it. Like I was doing all of the things.
As a retail shop owner, I know how important it is to have a good, reliable POS system. That's why I'm so excited about our sponsor today, Shopify. Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source. Track everything across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers both in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/alreadyfriends. That is all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/alreadyfriends to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/alreadyfriends. Thank you again to Shopify for sponsoring the Already Friends podcast.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Not to mention, I was doing a lot of tapping. Have you heard of tapping before, Allison?
EFT?
Yeah, EFT. You guys, if you haven't done this yet, it's everything of the sort. Like, I just think it healed me so much. It's walking through, even though I'm in debt right now, and even though I feel a lot of shame about it, and even though I thought I'd never be here again, I fully, completely love, accept myself and walking through that. And there's a ton of YouTube videos online about that. And then I also recognize, going back to my amygdala hijack, that I was just looking for hits of dopamine. I was just sad. I was big sad. I was stressed. I was trying to figure it out. So I needed to replace the hit of dopamine with something else. Because for me, shopping or overspending or just spending mindlessly, because that's what it really was. It was just not being conscious. It was like smoking a cigarette. So I was like, okay, what's going to be my cigarette replacement? And so I was like, okay, I'm going to have to do like 15 jumping jacks. This is miserable. I'm going to go on a walk. I'm going to work on my vision board. I'm going to, you know, listen to this podcast. I'm going to have this, you know, comfort moment. I'm going to make popcorn, whatever it is. And so I'm really trying to replace that. And then I really had to ask myself, like, why am I feeling big sad? And why do I think money is going to make me feel better? So I used to journal like every day, pages and pages and pages. And I don't know about y'all, but my handwriting is absolute shit. So I would go on walks around and around and around in circles in my neighborhood. And I would just talk to text in my phone. And I would just let whatever was going to come out. And I'd answer questions. And I can tell you some of the journal prompts that I used as well. But I would just answer questions and talk it through. And then when I felt like I wasn't, you know, or when I felt like I was done answering the question, I would just keep walking and see what else came out. And the way that I processed so much emotion, because, you know, emotion is energy in motion. So you're walking, you're focusing on something else, you let your brain kind of get into a flow state and you just start to dump. And memories started to come out of things that I heard from my parents or my grandparents or school or whomever. And I was like, oh my God, I do believe that about money. I had totally forgotten about it. So I had to get all of that out. And that's when like we're kind of processing all that bad programming. But then you have to replace it with new programming. So in that same vein, when I was processing that, after I kind of worked through it all, I needed to reprogram myself. And so I would then walk around and I would talk into my voice notes and I would tell myself about a compelling vision for my future. Amber, you're a business owner. You're fully supported by all of the people that work for you. You're making more money than you've ever made every month, and there's still money left over. You have the opportunity to live the life of your dreams, blah, 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 blah. And I would speak that. And then I would listen back to myself like a podcast. And I listened to that over and over and over, that compelling vision for my future, until I believed it. And when I tell you that I am living that future today, I'm not saying this is scientific, but it worked for me.
Wow. Those are really fascinating modalities that you chose. Like, I've never heard of freezing the credit cards in actual ice in the freezer, but I love how metaphorically that makes so much sense. And ironing the money, where did you come up with those?
I don't know. I mean, I have to give credit where credit's due. If, like I said, I've been very involved in the self-development world and I've just kind of picked up these nuggets over time. So I wish I had a root source for where that came from, but I just had this idea that I was going to treat my money well. Like, I was going to clean my wallet out. I was going to make sure that the money situation was sacred and I was going to make sure that I treated it with respect. And I have this belief that, you know, we all say we want money. We all want a good relationship with money. The first episode of Old Money was make money your boyfriend, because that's what I was really doing. It's like, if you want an intimate relationship with someone or something and you just ignore it, you hate to look at it, you mistreat it, you only want it when it's there, but you're mad when it's not. That sounds like a really toxic relationship to me. So setting up money dates with yourself, treating your money with a lot of compassion and care, treating yourself with compassion and care within that relationship. That's the hallmark of a healthy relationship with a partner. So why wouldn't you apply the same principles to your money if you wanted an intimate relationship with it?
Okay. Treat money like your boyfriend. I love that.
Love that.
It sounds like your money journey had a lot to do with overspending and that spending when you wanted to feel something else. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the other part of money is getting behind the belief that you're worthy of making a lot, which I think we can all be like, oh, you know, you don't need money to be happy or whatever. But like, money in other terms is just freedom. It's security. We all do need it for a lot of things in the world that we live in. So I think getting past the belief that it's bad to want money and it's bad to want a lot of money is where a lot of people struggle. I think we should talk about that side of the money coin now.
100%. And I think this is really interesting too, because, you know, I've got this book right here. It's called Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. I would recommend this to everybody. And, you know, I buy all these money books and I love talking about money and I kind of forget that people don't like that I do that or people are uncomfortable with it. And again, it's coming from a lot of these really core beliefs that we picked up and we've been holding on to for ourselves. But I have to ask anybody who has kind of, or holds maybe a negative feeling about wanting money, or, you know, they have this programming of must be nice for these rich people or all rich people are evil. First of all, recognizing where that comes from. I mean, we've been programmed that way by Hollywood forever. It's always the rich guy that's the evil one. But why do we want money? We want money because of the feelings we think it will give us when we have it. We have this idea that if my bank account was at a certain value, I would feel satisfaction. I would feel security. I would feel happier. I would love myself more. I would be living my life on, I would be living my best life at that point. But the reality is that there's always somebody with a bigger yacht. And when you get to a certain point in your money growth, you recognize that it's never going to be enough. And that is true unless you start healing the inside first. So if you really want resources, joy, freedom, and that's what you think money is going to get you, my question is, how can we get resources, joy, and freedom now in our lives? Because that's what we're all craving and that's all what we're after. And if I asked you or asked anybody, why do we hate that person that wants resources, joy, and freedom? Why would we hate on that? Like, those are all pretty neutral, beneficial things that I could say anybody would want, and I would want that for them. But when we say we want money, all of a sudden we villainized that. So what's the difference? So I think a lot of it is, again, just recognizing where that programming comes from and then neutralizing money. Like, does money have to be evil? Is money super good? Does money make you a better person? Does money make you, if you're having more money in your bank account, does it make you a better person? Does it make you a hotter person? Does it make you a happier person? Or is it just money in your bank account? And then you have the option to do what you need with it. So I really view money as a resource, as a tool. It's something that flows in and flows out. And, you know, the more that it flows into me, the more that it flows out. And I feel great about that. I have 7 salaries to pay at our agency. And, you know, we've been making more money than ever. And it's more goes out every single month. And just the capacity to hold that has really been a growth lesson for me. It has been challenging when you cut these big checks. You're like, holy cow, that's a lot of money. But I am offering resources, joy, and freedom to everybody that works for me. And I think they deserve that. And I have my own. So it's all about a balance. And it's just like uncharged now.
That capacity comment that you made, I feel like is so valid both in money and in social media. If you don't have the capacity to hold on to being in that energetic alignment of like, oh, I can maintain this amount of people listening to my podcast, following me on the internet, seeing those numbers, having this in my bank account, like I believe you will absolutely, because I've done it, self-sabotage and get rid of it if you don't feel like you deserve it. So doing all of that work that you said to heal those wounds is so important, because just because you get it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to keep it or that it's going to keep coming.
So true. And I think the capacity conversation tactically with money is like managing a budget of $3,000 a month so that you can learn how to manage a budget of $30,000 a month. If you don't learn how to budget at $3,000 a month, you won't have the skills to do it 10x. So with that, it's like, where is your money flowing to? Is it going to investments? Is it going to savings? Is it going to overspending? And I love your comment, Allison, about the capacity on social media too. And I think everybody thinks that they want business growth right away. They want podcast growth right away. And the reality is if you don't learn the lessons or make the mistakes on a smaller scale and you make them right away on a bigger scale because your business hockey sticked, you're in a lot more hurt. So I'm totally good with my growth and our growth as an agency. I think of it as a step. So, you know, in startup world and venture capital world, the whole goal when you're building a business is to hockey stick it so that you go up and to the right, just like major growth, major revenue, makes you really attractive to investors. But in a small business, I always say our growth is like not just stairs, but like those really awkward stairs in a garden where it's like 1.5 steps per stair. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like awkward to walk down. It's awkward to walk up too. It's like a half gate and it's all weird. And I want those very long type of stability pieces because it allows me to look at everything holistically. It allows me to look at everything from a risk perspective and then make a better choice when we get to the next step, as opposed to just flailing and falling, because things that go up really fast come down really fast too.
I think that's such a good reminder. Wow. Yeah. I love step up, walk it a little bit, feel it out. Look around, and then when you're ready, go up again. Yes. You mentioned venture capitalists and funding. Could you talk about that? I know that's kind of a pivot, but I would love to know more.
I think this is such a fascinating topic to talk about right now because there's a lot of money flowing around. It definitely did plug up last year and the year prior. But with venture capital, it's about, you know, we've all been inundated with Shark Tank now. Like, hi, sharks. I'm here for $100,000 so that I can vibe for a little is my favorite meme ever. But the venture capital world is interesting because there are people out there that have to deploy money. Like, they have money that they need to put into something in order for their money to work. So some of the things that I talk about on the podcast is like, if we want to be really wealthy, we want to be rich, why would we do something different than what rich people are doing? Like, oh, we see a bunch of people out there like buying real estate, investing in businesses, is playing in the stock market, you know, working with teams of people to manage their money. But we are like, well, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. Rich people do that. Okay, cool. Like, let me know how that works out. I see a lot of wealthy people and wealthy companies investing in businesses, trying things out. And listen, not everything hits, not everything grows, but you have to put your money in the game in order to play. For people that are out there on the startup side, or you're starting a business and you're looking at bringing in investors to your business, there's a lot of amazing resources out there. I'm a member of Female Founder Collective. I'm obsessed with this community. It is such an incredible group of women who are all in different stages of funding or growing their businesses. There's a lot of resources and a lot of connections to capital. However, if you go that route, just know that you're giving up ownership of your business in certain pieces. Now, it's certainly better to have 1% of a very large pie than 100% of a very small pie. So something to keep in mind as you balance that out. I personally have bootstrapped my business, meaning all the money that I've made has gone back into the business and I've grown it organically. So I retain 100% ownership for me. And in growing a business or a podcast or any asset, that's exactly what rich people do all of the time. Building an asset or something that's attractive to investors, attractive to the market, attractive to somebody out there to buy, acquire, partner with, strategic partner. That's what we need to be thinking about doing, is like, how can we create value in the world, in the marketplace? That has changed my net worth and my opportunities beyond anything that I could have done by just raking a salary every single month.
Yeah. The first business that I opened, it was called New Wave. And I, at that time, only thought about businesses like, this is something that I love. It's my passion, like this will be a fun thing for me. And now that it's been a couple years and I've started various projects, I'm not saying I'm already thinking about my exit strategy, but I would never just start a business now of like, oh, this is just like a fun thing for me. Like the second shop I opened, I'm like, okay, how do I set this up so that we can sell it at some point, so that we can bring on another owner, like whatever. And that emotionally has gone way better for me, because I feel like with my first business, I attributed so much of my personal value and my emotional well-being if the business was doing well. But if you think about business just as business more, and I love at the beginning, you said, you know, like it's still, it's your service to the world. It's still your passion, but not tying yourself so emotionally with it, I think is very helpful, because I think that's why people don't want to end up bringing other people on, right? I mean, you can please expand way more. You know way more about this than I do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big, I've walked through that journey too. And I still do this all the time. Like I cry when things are going wrong in the business. Like I think it's all on me. And that is not a sustainable mindset. I'm not trying to build this business for me, because if you think about the three ways that you can get out of business, you either shut it down, you have a succession plan, or you sell. Those are the only three ways to end a business. Or else you have a lifestyle business and you work forever. And that can be fine. You can create a job for yourself. But I didn't start this to create a job for myself. I started this to create a business. And I'm not just going to quit and be like, okay, we're done here. And I don't have any kids that are of age to take over this business, nor would I want them to. I'd want them to do their own journey. So it's like, okay, what does that leave us with? It's like building something to sell, or building something to partner with another agency maybe in the future. And when you get really wrapped up in your identity, when I left my corporate job, the way that I had a full-on identity crisis, like who am I? What is my worth in the world? That was, again, a capacity lesson that I had to learn then when it wasn't my business, so that I could walk through that fire and now get to the point of knowing that my business is not me. Legally, it's not me. It's its own corporate entity. It's also just not a representation of me. Like people say, like, my business is my baby. No, it's not. Your business is your business. Your business is not your baby. Your baby is your baby. Could be a fur baby. It could be a human baby, but your business is not your baby. You need to treat it like a business. That's what a CEO would do. I don't see, you know, Jeff Bezos saying, Amazon's my baby. No, like that's just not the vibe. So yeah, when you get really tied up in it, it's like your identity's in it and you don't want to give any of it away. Well, is that what's best for the business, or is that what's best for you?
Okay. Could you give more examples of treating your business like a business, not your baby?
Boundaries are really important in business, and thinking about how you're going to be available or always work. Like if you want to work 100 hours a week to sprint on something or iterate on a product or whatever it might be, that's okay for a while, but is that sustainable long-term? Probably not. But if your baby's crying all night and you have to help your baby, you're going to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes. You're not going to walk away from that situation. So I think in business, we have to make sure that we treat that differently. Also, I hate the phrase when people say, like, when you join our team, you're family. No, we do not treat our employees like family. We treat our employees like employees and brilliant people. And with our families, we take advantage of people and we are too familiar with people. And that's not the way to build a healthy working relationship where you're interested in somebody's professional development, you're holding everybody to high standards and, you know, giving them HR and all these things. Like, that's different. So I think energetically, the way that we treat our business, we should have some protections in place so that we're not treating our business like an extension of ourselves. And that we, you know, I hate this because it's like, I didn't start an agency to start a corporation, like be all, you know, corporate carry, but you kind of need to do that in certain ways to make sure that you have these boundaries in place so your team is protected, your business is protected, and you are protected.
Wow, that's really eye-opening. Thank you for sharing that. Could we talk about someone who is moving up in income, whether that's scaling their own business, they get a new position, maybe their partner starts making more money. We obviously have all heard of lifestyle creep. So that's a part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's called the golden handcuffs, right? It's like when you get your raise, you're like, I can afford a new car and let's move and let's do this. And I deserve this. I treat myself, blah, blah, blah. And that is very true. Present you deserves to be treated well. So the old money philosophy is not about like saving every penny and scrimping and being frugal. Old money lifestyle is about living well and enjoying the spoils of our riches, balancing that. So present you certainly deserves a prize, but future you needs to be taken care of. The same way we take care of kind of like our inner child, you know, when you think back to like you baby you, and you think about, oh God, that girl just needed a hug. You need to remember that future you exists as well and be really cognizant of doing right by her. This is like your older grandmother version, mother version, the one that you want to be proud of you. And so when we get a raise, for example, we typically would advise like save half of that amount of the raise, like the delta between what you were earning and what you're getting now, and then make sure that that gets invested or saved or whatever, and then you can play with the other half. And this only works, of course, if you have a very balanced budget where you have savings, you have investing, you have, you know, a healthy cash flow in your life, like things are within. And I'm not here to say like you need to save 10% or invest 10% because everybody's journey is going to be very different. That's another thing I heard a lot of in the kind of regular, normal investment and money philosophy talk around there is people are like, here's the formula, follow it now until you die. And it's like, okay, well, what if I change jobs? Or what if I'm starting a business? Or what if I have kids? Or what if, like all these different things. So your budget allocation and the way that your money flows is going to change all the time. When I was starting my business, I didn't have two pennies to scrape together, bootstrapping everything. So you think I was maxing out my 401k? Like, no, I didn't even have one. You know, like, okay, so there's a couple years I didn't invest in it. I don't care. I will make it up later. It's going to be okay. I did good things before. I'll do good things after. So I think being really cognizant of the golden handcuffs, which are just things that are going to chain you to what you're doing right now and not give you any wiggle room, that can be really scary. And that might be in a job that you have. Like if you buy a house, lease a car, do all the things, you have all these payments, but all of a sudden, you know, a new boss comes in that's making your life a living hell. You have bills to pay. You can't leave the job, even if you should for your mental health. Or you get married, you're in a relationship, you merge all your finances. You weren't really sure about it to begin with. And then it comes that like, this is not the right partnership for me. How do you get out of that? And having some savings, having some financial foundation of your own, I think is really important to give yourself options. Because that's what wealth is. Wealth is not what you're wearing. It's not the logo on your purse. It is having options to do what's right for you whenever that mood strikes.
Okay. Could you give a definition of golden handcuffs?
Yeah. The golden handcuffs are essentially commitments that you make, financial commitments that are going to trap you where you are. So I'll give you a really good example. When I was working at the real estate development firm, you know, selling real estate, people were like, buy a house. You should buy this townhouse. You should do that. And I absolutely could. I could have gotten a loan. I could have bought a house and I would have been a homeowner. But I knew in my heart that if I did that, it was going to chain me to that job forever. And it wouldn't have given me the opportunity to leave that job, save money, and live on basically nothing in an apartment by the beach and bringing in a roommate type of a thing, because I would have had a mortgage and taxes and all of these other obligations. So when you're younger and you have a little bit more flexibility, I think there's, and listen, my mom was a real estate agent. My grandmother was a real estate agent. The American dream was pounded into my head my whole life. And then I went into selling real estate. Like, I get it. And I love real estate. And I think investing in real real estate is a good path in many markets, right? It's not a guarantee, but it's absolutely something that I will be doing in the future of building out my portfolio and things like that. But if I were to make that move early because of a societal pressure or because of pressure from my coworkers to go buy that house because we were selling homes and this one's great for you, I would have trapped myself and I would have had golden handcuffs to that job. I was just very young. I was the only woman on the executive team. I was the youngest on the executive team. And I was in a really big role. I would have been stuck there. I wouldn't have been able to leave. This agency wouldn't exist. I wouldn't be on this podcast today. Saving money, living lean, that allowed me to have more opportunities and options when the going got tough and I got real with myself about what I needed next.
Wow, I think that's such a good perspective and a reminder because you're so right. Like I'm 29 and I don't own a house. And I literally just said a couple weeks ago, oh, I'm feeling the pressure of like wanting to be a homeowner. I like went and started looking at houses, but it's like the other side of me is like, do we want to be here forever? What about this? Like it makes me feel trapped in a way. And of course, yes, I can sublease it out or get tenants, I guess. You're not subleasing if you own it. But something about it has that like, yeah, as you said, the golden handcuff, it looks shiny on the outside and it's appealing, but it's holding you to that. And I agree, there's so many situations where buying a home makes sense. And I for sure will someday, but reminding myself and our audience that that isn't always what's best for everyone. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that comes up a lot in this conversation, again, is you mentioned it, like I'm feeling ready or is it pressure or this like shame? Like, am I behind? Like, should I have bought a house already? And the reality is that not only are there a ton of hidden costs in homeownership, we're talking property taxes, we're talking, you know, mortgage insurance, we're talking about, you know, when your foundation has a crack in it or your water heater goes out or all the maintenance items, the furniture, all of those hidden costs of homeownership that really tally up. There's also an opportunity cost. And you mentioned it, Allison. Do I live here forever? Do I have opportunity to move? And so right now, for example, like I could have a really, really, really big house and not live where I want to live. I live in the heart of San Diego where I walk to everything. I'm obsessed with my neighborhood. And we live in a multi-million dollar, I'm quoting right now, condo, but we're renting it and we're saving money. Like the reality is if we owned this place, we'd be in a pretty stressful space. But right now we're renting and it gives us the flexibility in this like exciting period of our life. Like we're about to get married. We're still feeling young. We're traveling all the time. This is a very low maintenance household. Like I'm choosing that, actively choosing that.
Oh my gosh. That just reminded me of, there's a phrase going, please tell me you know it, viral on TikTok and Instagram right now, quiet budgeting or loud budgeting. Loud budgeting.
Oh, I don't know about this. Tell me more.
I've started seeing it and it's people just being like, it's okay to admit that you're budgeting. That like everyone, you know, for the past few years has tried to be like, you know, act like you can afford everything, like put it all on credit. And now it's like, no, I can't afford it. I don't want to buy it. And I even saw this TikTok of this girl saying, you know what the cool girls are doing? They're driving old beater cars. They're not, they don't have a lease on a car that they can't afford. And right now I drive this shitty old 2000 Dodge Dakota that's rusted out. And there are some days where I'm like, I should get a new car. And I'm like, I have no car payment. Like it is so freeing. I'm like, I could dip and move out of the country. I don't own a house. I can sell the car and be done with it. And that feels freeing to me because of where I'm at right now, because I don't know if I want to be here forever. And I just feel like I love that the pendulum is swinging and people are being like, it's okay to say like, hey, I can't buy all of the things right now. And that's—
Or let me even just add one thing into that, please, because I'm obsessed with this trend. But instead of saying, I can't afford this, what about it's not a priority for me right now? Because that shifts that mindset really quickly of from lack to ownership and agency, right? Like, could I buy that thing right now? The purse, the luxury vacation, whatever, like whatever is coming up for y'all out there, right? You can get it on credit. You could get it with cash. Is it a priority for you or do you have other priorities? So changing that language around gives you ownership and agency around your choices as opposed to being like, ah, I can't, it's not my fault, I can't afford it. It's really owning that. And I think that's a really beautiful thing, Allison. And by the way, driving an old car, like that's so old money. Like every family in, you know, the Northeast is driving an old beater Volvo because it's not about showing off what you have. It's about having it in your bank account.
Oh my God. Thank you for that correction. Okay. Taking notes. Are there any other money phrases that you think that people say a lot that are subconsciously hindering their growth?
what comes to mind for me is just this idea of ownership. There's like an internal locus of control and an external locus of control. Have you heard about this concept, mm-hmm. Allison?
No, tell me.
So basically people who have an external locus of control, they're looking for all the reasons around them to explain why they are where they are. I can't make more money because of who the president is. The economy is this way. It's an election year, inflation, COVID, all these things. They're looking outside of themselves for explanations. That's not to discount those things, right? Like COVID did put a big wrinkle in inflation. Things are expensive right now. But is that what determines how much you can earn, or is that an excuse? Somebody with an internal locus of control looks for opportunities or ways that they can add value, saying, wow, I noticed that inflation is really high right now. Maybe I can create a service to help people budget better so that we don't feel the impact of this. Or maybe I can create value in the marketplace by starting a business or within my company to earn more so that I feel this less. I'm noticing outside influences and I'm going to take ownership for how I can react to them versus just pointing outside of myself and looking for all of the people to blame.
Wow. I love that. And that translates to, in so many areas, relationships.
Especially in relationships. Yes. 100. Like, sorry to my fiance. I do that to him all the time. I'm like, I'm in a bad mood because you did this. And it's like, that's not the truth, Amber. Like, you're in a bad mood because of what's happening internally in your body, chemically, hormonally, whatever. And Justin's the excuse.
Mm-hmm. And he's just there and taking the beating.
Poor guy. I know. I feel bad.
Okay, so let's talk about your agency and your podcast really quick. What is it like being the founder of an agency and having, what'd you say, 7 people on payroll?
Yeah, it's very scary. And it is stretching my capacity for uncomfortability. And it's the best thing I've ever done, all of the things at once. It is such a joy to really have my work be my art. Like, I love what we do. I love the projects that we work on. I love our clients. I love our team. Like, we're solving creative problems all the time. Like, how do we tell the story better? Like, how do we program this community so people will want to live here? All those problems are so creative and amazing, but it also comes with a lot of uncertainty and, you know, where's our next client coming from? Or did I mess up that deal? Did I blow it? You know, it feels very lonely sometimes. It feels like it's all on me. It feels like it's crushing. And at the same time, it's like, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So there's a lot of duality in what any leader or any business owner does. And unfortunately, I think a lot of us, myself included, default to all the things that are hard. Like, I'll just be like, to be super frank, Q1 was like a dark night of the soul for me. Like, I really struggled. I have a lot of personal stuff going on. I have a lot of work challenges happening. And I'm like, can I make it through this? And the reality is, I always do. Sometimes it's a little bit more uncomfortable than others. And sometimes it feels easy and breezy. But at the same time, like, the freedom that I have to work with the people that I want to work with, to only take on the clients that I know are going to be good clients for us, to do the projects that we're good at, as opposed to just getting handed a bunch of tasks. Like, there's a lot of agency in that. And again, when we talk about what a wealthy life is like, it's a Thursday morning right now to take people behind the fourth wall. You and I are chatting on a Thursday morning, and I get to spend my morning having coffee with you and chilling and talking about something I'm super passionate about, connecting with you. If I was working at another job, I'd have to like ask to do this, and I get to design my own schedule. I get to work on projects that are meaningful to me. That is a wealthy life to me. So, you know, it's hard, but it's also beautiful.
And you're also about to take an amazing trip.
I know. Thank God. We need a vacation so bad.
Tell us about it.
Oh my gosh. We go to the same place all of the time. It's called The Cape, a Thompson Hotel in Cabo. And when I tell you, this place is just like magic. It is like the sexiest people. Everybody there is just like vibing and good. The architecture, super like Southern California 60s vibe meets like Mexico, all open. The pool scene is super great. Like, my boyfriend can like go drink with random strangers. I can read a book. Like, it's the perfect balance and mix. There's a huge wave right in front that is like a very advanced wave. So you got great surfing to watch all day long. And I now am like trying to put together, I need a scientific study on this, where how often high achievers need to go on vacation, because we have not been on vacation in way too long. And the way that I'm literally like crawling with my fingernails to get to this trip, because I'm like, I need a break so badly. And I found out, or I figured out rather, that there's a difference between a trip and a vacation. Like, a trip is tourism, sightseeing, activity, and a vacation is like I rot on a beach chair. And I think every once in a while, creative people, high achievers, anybody really, needs to go rot on a beach chair or in a snowbank or whatever suits your needs. But yes, we are almost at the vacation. And thank you for being so gracious with me of fitting in this time because my schedule is packed before and after that trip. But that's what you have to do.
No, I'm so thankful. Your schedule is, you have so many things you could be doing. And the fact that you gave us time to share your wisdom and be here, like, we are so appreciative.
You're so sweet. It's my pleasure. Honestly, thank you for the opportunity because this is what I love to chat about.
And your podcast, Old Money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Old Money. I love her. Just a passion project of mine. And honestly, it's been such an amazing vehicle. I'm sure you feel the same way with Already Friends. Like, I just can't even believe people that are in our community that are so brilliant and smart and lovely and thoughtful. And we have this community of rich girls that are just like getting after it. And we talk about financial, emotional health. We talk about tactical stuff, like how to start investing or how to get ahead at work or how to set up systems for saving and all these different types of things. And I started the podcast because honestly, I love to chat about money and I love to chat about our emotions. And we've had some really, it's mostly me, but we've had some really great guests on. For any of the mamas out there, an amazing woman who is helping build financial literacy in little kids by creating like a fake economy in the home. We had a 30-year veteran of Chase Financial Group come on talking about retirement savings, all that type of stuff. And then you have me waxing poetic about, you know, ironing my dollar bills and what that means to me. So I think it's a good balance, but overall, what I'm trying to do is break down the new rules to old money, because I think a lot of us look at these old money families or these Nepo babies or these people that are just getting handed a trust fund and saying like, I want that. Well, how can we alchemize that want, that jealousy, that whatever it is into action for ourselves and learn the new rules to build our own trust funds? That's my goal. And all the rich girls that are doing it with me, like, I love them. I love you. Thank you for being on this journey with us.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That is a perfect place to end. But before we wrap up, quickly, I'll ask you our signature question. Mm-hmm. To you, what makes a good friend?
I love this question so much. I think it is something that needs to be asked more. And I loved thinking about this. And my answer for the group, for the class, is somebody who has and respects healthy boundaries. And the reason I find that to be so important, whether it's in a personal relationship or financial relationship, is that somebody with healthy boundaries is going to take care of themselves. And they're also going to take care of you by asking and kind of, you know, navigating these challenging things with grace with you. So one of my best friends and I had the benefit of going to the same therapist. She referred me to her. And we now have such a different relationship than we did 5-10 years ago, where if we call and we have something heavy to talk about, we're asking, do you have a capacity for this? Is this okay for me to chat with you about right now? And then instead of just giving advice or lamenting or, you know, getting angry with the other person, it's like, how can I support you? What do you need from me? And then being really honest about when we can and cannot show up for each other. And the way that our friendship has deepened in such a meaningful way, that is the healthiest friendship that I have. And it's because we both have healthy boundaries. With money, it's the same thing. Like, you know, I don't have a budget for that. And the other person's not going to shame you, harass you, tell you to change your budget. They're going to be like, great, I love that for you. How can we pivot together? And I think that type of relationship is one that I'm trying to cultivate in many areas of my life. So I think healthy boundaries.
I also heard, back to that word that you said, prioritizing. I'm not prioritizing that right now. That's so much of what our relationships are too, is like, I love you and I want to prioritize our connection, but right now I have to prioritize this so that then I can prioritize you. And life is just this juggling act of figuring out what you're going to prioritize at any given moment.
And if a friend is giving you hell for not prioritizing them, that's not healthy friendship, right? That's something that is a drag on your energy and really, really challenging to navigate. So healthy friendship is one who says, I see you in that, Allison, like, go do your thing and I'll be here waiting for you when you're ready.
I literally had a friend that did that last year. And the way that that healed me in so many ways, like, we cried about it the other night, actually. So,
oh, I love that. It's gorgeous.
Well, how can our community find you and support you?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm on Instagram at Old Money Podcast. Send me a DM. I answer all the DMs and we answer a lot of the questions on the show because I feel like it's one of those things. Like, if you have the question, so does somebody else in the class. So we'll talk about it as a group. And anything that is out there, you have questions on life, money, business, et cetera, I try my best to give a good answer over social and we'll address it on the podcast as well. My personal is Amber in California, but I'm never there. And if you want to see more about our agency, the agency is called AF Marketing. It's spelled AF @mktg. Find us online on Instagram, etc. We do great work. If you want to be inspired, I don't mean to like blow us up, but like—
No, blow yourself up.
Our clients, it's really our clients and our team, like just the work that we do. Like if you need a design inspiration, you want to see what luxury brands are doing, like it's on our website, afmktg.com.
Amazing. I will be sure to link all of this in the show notes, and I will not keep you any longer because you have a vacation that you need to go take because you deserve it.
On my way.
And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Allison.
All right. We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Okay, wait, really quick before you go, if you want a chance to be the Arty Friends Listener of the Week, we have something for you. Leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And for bonus entries, there's so many ways to support our show. Share about us on your Instagram story, engage with us over on TikTok, post on our Facebook group, join the Patreon page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Make sure to send that rating and review to our Instagram page, Arty Friends Podcast, and we pick a new Listener of the Week every Wednesday. We'll send you a $10 Visa gift card if you win, just as a way of saying thank you, to buy you a coffee, buy you a sweet little treat, whatever you want. Thanks again, you guys. We appreciate you so, so much, and we'll catch you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.